the verse for me that year became Hebrews 13, 5 and 6, which is, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have. That's pretty powerful when you're getting ready to do the biggest sale of your life. To be content with what you have. And then it goes on to say, because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. And so we say with confidence, the Lord is my help. I will not be afraid. What can mere mortals do to me?
Welcome to the Generosity Now podcast, where we bring you inspiring stories of generosity and whole life stewardship. Our goal is to showcase individuals and organizations making a positive impact in our communities and across the world. I'm your host, Eric Most, president of the National Christian Foundation, Rocky Mountain Region. I'm joined by my incredible co-host, Lori Bosser, VP on our team. Lori, how are you doing today?
It's a great day. It's lots of fun to be able to share stories with others.
That's right. On today's story, we have Pete Gaisley joining us. Pete and Linda have been friends of mine for a few years now. We got introduced around a complex gift and the stewardship of their business. And we have just really enjoyed our time with them and really wanted to share a little bit of their story with you, the listeners. And so, Pete, welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Eric and Lori. It's great to be here.
Well, Pete, would you give our listeners a little overview about who you are, where you were raised, and how you came to know Jesus as your Lord and Savior?
You bet. Yeah. Linda and I grew up in Greeley, Colorado, really kind of different upbringings. I grew up, I think, in a fairly typical middle-class family, both parents, and had a sister. I still have a sister. You know, we went to church every Sunday, and it was kind of one of those traditional churches. And so for me, I was really, I guess, not convinced and living my own life. And when I was 17, my mom had given me a book on the Holy Spirit, because I was talking about this. I just don't feel like God is real. Had a teacher at school that was working on me and my girlfriend, who's now my wife of 40 plus years. And so, you know, God was working on me over a number of months, and one day after school it was the day. And so we went down in the basement into a classroom, and you know, my teacher and Linda and one of our friends prayed for me, and I gave my life to Jesus. And you know, he just came on me a powerful way that day, and things were never the same since then. So it was really cool. For Linda, she grew up in a family of five kids. She's the youngest, and her mom was a single mom. Her dad left them when she was 6 months old, and so very different upbringing, but she didn't know really any different. And her mom was an amazing, faithful woman of God, prayer warrior, and kind of fiercely raising five kids. Even when, you know, at church she was told she had to sit in the back row because she was a divorced woman. But she was faithful to God, and those kids were in church every time the doors were open. And Linda would tell you as a teen that there was a point where, in all of that faithfulness, she knew that that was her mom's faith, and it had to become hers. And so that was really the transformation for her. And she's been also a believer really ever since. But we have this great legacy in our families of, you know, from our parents and on down, that that God's been faithful in our lives for a long, long time. And he's faithful in our kids' lives. We've got two adult kids, and they're married. And we've got nine grandkids. And this last weekend, two of our granddaughters got baptized. So that was really special too.
What a wonderful way to celebrate Resurrection Weekend with baptisms. That's just really exciting.
It was really fun, for sure.
So, and that legacy of, you know, mothers praying for their kids, modeling it for their kids, is often something that comes through, or grandmothers. And it's neat to hear that story of how you guys had just the strength of faith in your parents.
Yeah, it was really cool, and it's a blessing for sure.
That's really neat. Really neat.
That's great. Pete, would you tell us a little bit about your family and in the scope of work that you've done over the years and what kind of led us up to getting to know each other a little bit more?
Sure. Yeah. So, well, I mentioned my family. Linda and I have been, we were actually junior high sweethearts is when we first met, 13 and 14 years old, and dated off and on throughout high school. That's plus and minuses because you're immature and dumb at that time. And got married very young. I was 20 and she was 19. And last December, we celebrated our 40th wow. anniversary. So we feel very blessed. You know, not all of those years were easy. I think anybody that's been married for a long time will tell you that it's not easy along the way.
You really grew up together. Right?
Yeah. And especially as adults, we did. You know, we look back on that. We had a great church that we were part of the first, you know, 20 years of our marriage. And even now we can look back and see the deposits that, you know, our pastors and our friends put in our lives. So yeah, it was a true blessing. And then, like I said, we live in Loveland, Colorado, Northern Colorado, and both our kids are close by. My son and his wife is in Windsor, and they've got three girls. And then my daughter and her husband are in Cheyenne, and they've got six kiddos. So we did great ROI in the grandkid department for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. Yeah, Dale, tell us a little bit about more of your kind of your work scope that you've done over the years.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, my dad was an entrepreneur, and so I grew up with that. Went to, the plan was to go to business school, went to CSU and graduate and either get a great job or start a business. And then after our first anniversary, we found out we were pregnant. So Linda was not following the 5-year plan. And she says she never had that problem before she met me. So, she punches me about this point of the story. And so I had to get a job, and I had just gotten a job on campus as a student police officer. And it was really for two altruistic reasons. The first one was it paid 25 cents an hour more than the job I had at the grocery store, which, you know, back in 1984, 85, I guess, that was a lot of money. It was going to take me a couple of years to get that raise at the grocery store. And then the other one was I thought, hey, it'll look good. It's a responsible job. It'll look good on a resume, you know, for whatever business I decide to go into. But that job and getting pregnant led to becoming a police officer. And I got hired by the city of Fort Collins and did that for 13 years. I was the youngest guy promoted in about 20 years and really on a fast track. Had to do some very innovative things. But I was not that kid that from 4 or 5 years old dreamed of doing that. I always dreamed of being that entrepreneur. And so I was a square peg in a round hole, even though I loved it all, driving fast and shooting guns and catching bad guys and, you know, doing good for the community. But it was just not going to be a long-term fit for me. So I left and started a business doing speaking, leadership, and management training, and had a great time for about 3 years traveling the country, talking to police departments and business audiences and all over the place. And then our kids were in junior high, and it was really clear I needed to be home. And so timing was perfect. It was the beginning of 2000, and you might remember the dot-com bubble burst. And so I put about 80 resumes out, and it was just crickets. Mm. And in late August, I got a call from a company, and I'd forgotten I'd even sent them a resume. And I was like, what do you do? And they said, oh, we're a cleaning company. I'm like, great. Fat, sweaty guy, wife beater t-shirt, cigar stub in the corner of his mouth. This is not going to be good. But I didn't have anything else. So I went to the interview, and I was really impressed. They were working in Fortune 500 campuses. They were at HP and Agilent here in Fort Collins. And they had this really interesting way of measuring service. And so I was very intrigued. And very quickly, we did about 5 interviews in a week, and they hired me. And so I learned to become a janitor. I didn't know anything about the business, but I knew how to lead people, and that's what they were hiring me for. So over the next 9 years, that company would grow from about 1,500 employees and $50 million to 6,000 employees. We're doing, I think, $240 million when I left, and we were in 44 states, Canada and Costa Rica. And I was the executive director of environmental health and safety and customer service, which translates to I get to deal with all the problems. So it was a great experience working in all these world-class facilities, but I was back on the road all the time. I'd leave on Monday, come home on Friday, work half a day on Saturday to catch up, and then a couple hours on Sunday to get ready to go. And it just was wearing us down. So in the fall of 2009, I left, took a few months off, and applied for a few jobs, and nothing really hit the mark. And it's like, you know what? I like this industry. I think we can do something in Colorado with it. And so in January of 2010, we launched Total Facility Care. And Linda was not excited about it. I'm the entrepreneur, the visionary, the risk taker in the family. And she likes that steady paycheck every couple of weeks. But she supported me. And we got going, and turned out I was a really great salesperson. It only took me 5 months to get our first customer. In the summer, funds were kind of running out, and Linda went and got a job and really kind of held up the back end of things for us, kept some money coming in, and we had healthcare and, you know, all of those important things as we grew the business. And at the end of that first year, we had billed just under $60,000, and I had two part-time employees, and we'd probably put maybe $2,000 back in our bank account. I mean, really nothing. It was all going back into the business, and that would be kind of the course of things over the next few years. So kind of fast forward 12 years in 2022, we decided to exit the business after kind of 23 years in the facilities world. So I think we'll probably get to that story a little bit later here. But that's what we've been doing over the last long time, I guess. The moral is I can't keep a job is kind of the bottom line of all of that. So,
well, I'd like to challenge that a little bit, because it is really fun to see how God just prepared you. You know, in that beginning stages, Pete, what I heard was you being responsible, having a job, providing for your family, you know, putting aside a little bit of yours and doing what God had placed you into with a whole heart of, you know, glorifying Him and providing for the family and continuing that process and then stepping into this other job. And travel is hard on families. It's difficult to be away and working that much. But it sounds like so much that you and Linda worked together in a lot of these processes and decisions of where you were working, what was good for the family, her stepping in and taking some of that responsibility. Entrepreneurship is just really hard. It's really hard to start. And you guys sound like you guys did it together. And ultimately, why we're here is God definitely grew things and blessed you guys and His kingdom through all of that.
Yeah, for sure. And trust me, I was immature during a lot of those years. And, the motives weren't always God-driven. They were a lot more about money and ego and those kinds of things. And Linda was great about, keeping me grounded through all of that and, calling me on my stuff, right, when it was appropriate to do so. And you're right, Lori, business travel is tough. People think it's glamorous, I've been to lots of places, and I can tell you the airports and the hotels all look alike, and so do pretty much the inside of every Fortune 500 campus. So I've been to a lot of places, but doesn't mean that I've actually seen the places, It's all that you're focused on something else. It's not vacation or tourism. You're focused on business and getting work done.
Right. My husband's been to 32 countries and would say that exact same thing that you just said. So now things did change, because a few years ago, you and Linda had the opportunity to go through a journey of generosity. And that seemed to be a catalyst in changing some things for you guys. Can you share a little bit about that experience and the impact that it had on you too?
Yeah, for sure. So about 6 months before the journey of generosity at my CEO group, a friend of all of ours, Jamie Bessler of Bessler Homes up in Greeley, came to our group, and he talked about this life model of generosity, and L-I-F-E, labor, influence, finances, and expertise. And it was great. I was intrigued. Linda and I, we've been tithers since early in our marriage. One of the principles of our business when we started it was that we were going to give back to the communities that we served through the profits that we made. So we did that in a bunch of ways. But I was just really intrigued by what Jamie said. And he mentioned kind of in passing, he got this model during a jog, a journey of generosity. And so after the meeting, I was like, Jamie, tell me what is this jog thing? He's like, oh, I went to Memphis, Tennessee a couple of years ago, and it's like a overnight thing. And I'm like, well, I want to know about it. When's the next one? And so he connected me to Roger Sandberg with NCF, who hosts that jog in Memphis, Tennessee. And the next one was going to be in March. So the first week in March of 2020, and as everyone will remember, nothing was going on in March of 2020. We hopped on an airplane and flew to Memphis, Tennessee. And, you know, I think by God's grace, all the shutdowns and all of that didn't happen for another couple of weeks, at least in our area. And we had an amazing, transformative experience. Anybody that's been through a jog knows about Alan Barnhart. Well, it was hosted at his place. And he's an amazing businessman with, that God's just captured his heart. And we were just totally inspired and in awe, and learned so many things. Learned about a finish line. Like Alan had this multi-million dollar business, and he was the 40th highest paid person in his company because he and his wife chose a finish line, and he didn't all of that extra things that could be profits and all of that they poured into generosity and giving, and both internally to their employees and externally to ministries. And that was just kind of like a wow moment. And so there was lots of things like that, but we were just super inspired and humbled. And, you know, I think when you give yourself to an experience like that, the Holy Spirit comes to work for sure. And so when we got home that weekend, our company, from the beginning, we said, look, this is for God's glory. And we copied a lot of stuff out of, you know, kind of the famous Christian companies, Hobby Lobby and Chick-fil-A and all of that. But Lyndon and I got down on our knees in our living room. It's like, okay, God, this company is really yours. Like we give it to you. And that was a huge moment for us, and it was super freeing. And then the next week, in God's wisdom, he shut down the economy. And it's like, okay, God, well, that's not what I would do with my company, but it's your company. So let's see how this goes. And we were in the commercial cleaning business. So all of our customers were businesses, and 40% of them got closed down and shut right overnight. So it was quite a moment of faith immediately after that experience.
Yeah, I was actually just reflecting on the article we wrote a couple years back about you and Lyndon and the business, A Janitor for Jesus. We'll go ahead and post that to the we'll post that to the show notes, and just love the just that statement that you just shared about how, like, you got down on your knees, you prayed to God, relinquishing control of the business to him. This is your business. Next week, economy shuts down, business, you know, opportunities look like they go absolutely to the ground. Lord, are you sure this is what you want to do with your business?
Right.
But there's a change in that story too, right? So you guys became really specialized as it came to cleaning and COVID cleaning and some things like that. And that then kind of changed the trajectory of the business a bit, and then also opened up an opportunity for you guys to consider that exit that you talked about a little bit before.
Yeah, for sure. So, because of my background and the big customers that we'd had when I worked for that national company, in the fall, I always watched the CDC and the WHO's website to see what was going on with, usually it was influenza, but, you know, over the years it had been swine flu and H1N1 and bird flu and all of those kinds of things. And so You know, we'd seen COVID stuff on the radar since November. And so, you know, we had some expertise. We did a lot in the medical side, but the immediate crisis was that, we were going to run out of money really quickly. Our business was scalable, but, it, you know, losing 40% of your customers is a real deal. And, you know, we're at a place where we had, 100 people working for us and some fixed costs, and, you know, it was a crisis. And, over the next few weeks, you know, God would just be working on us. And there was a really specific day that, I'd set aside to pray and to think. And, probably mid to late morning, I called my VP and I'm like, "Hey, gather everybody together this afternoon. We're going to talk." And, Linda and I had stopped taking a salary, cause that was just like an immediate thing. And we'd done all the responsible things. Like in February, January, we were reaching out to our bankers, all three of them. None of them wanted to extend our line of credit, make it any bigger. I mean, I was doing the things to prepare, right? And so they're just like, we knew what our runway was and it wasn't going to be much. And so, you know, we brainstormed with our team, how can we save money? And told them what we were doing. And then I said, "I'm not going to ask you guys to cut your salary, but I need you all to come back in the next couple of days and tell me what you're going to cut." And, you know, and I'm thinking 10% or something, right? Well, we had people that came back and said, "Look, I can cut my salary in half." And it was so humbling to Linda and I. And fortunately, we didn't have to do that. You know, we were able to cut expenses and, you know, we paid our local vendors quickly. We paid our multi-billion dollar vendors slowly. They could afford to not be paid by little old us. Again, doing all those smart things. And then God really provided. We had become experts in COVID decontaminations, and we did hundreds of them over the next few months. And we trained our team. Our people were really secure in all the information that we gave them. We were way proactive ahead of anything that the government was doing. And we just gave them real information. And so we did hundreds of these. By the end of the year, we hadn't lost really a dime of revenue. Our revenues were flat, which was incredible with the loss of so much business. And it also meant that actually we grew. We had people coming to us and they're like, "Hey, we've had, you know, our drunk Uncle Joe cleaning, and we're thinking maybe we need a professional in here." And it's like, "Yeah, maybe you do." And so we had grown. So by the end of 2020, we were just in an amazing place. And I think that jog changed a bunch of stuff for us in that, on how we treated our people. Like, we were just taking great care of them. And at the end of the year, we were able to give a bonus out to, you know, our 100 folks. And most of those are just hourly folks. And that was a little over $70,000. Mm-hmm. And it was awesome. And we topped that off. We paid the taxes on both sides of it so that they got their true bonuses. And it was, we had a fun year end in 2020, which was really cool. And we had a lot of momentum going into 2021, which was fun because we were growing and we had our people and life was pretty good. So you might remember 2021 was interesting because all of a sudden in March, the government paid people $600 a week on top of their unemployment. So if you do the math, $600 a week is 15 bucks an hour. And that's just for sitting at home, let alone whatever your unemployment is on top of that. And so we're doing great. The middle of the year, we did our mid-year planning and we're in good shape. We'd seen, you know, applications fall off, but we were still hiring enough people that things were good. And I left on vacation. And when I came back, my VP and my HR manager were like, "Hey, we can't hire anybody. And our competitors have gone to $15 an hour. And we'd gone up to $13.50. And I think at the time, minimum wage was around 10. So we were way above minimum wage anyway. I'm like, "Okay, well, we don't have any more money. So let's figure out what to do. But God had been kind of laying some things on me for a few months, and I thought it was really going to be about transforming the company differently. Again, this generosity thing and how we're treating people, and really it was for this specific time. And so I went and worked on the case study, figured out the math, and we were going to have to ask our clients for a 25% to 30% price increase. And that's unheard of in our industry. If you ask for 3% to 5%, like, it's a fight. People will, you know, fire you. It's just crazy. And it's like, okay, God, again, this is your company, and we just lay this down before you. And so we wrote this case study. It was about 30 pages long. And one of my top five customers called me, and he says, "Hey, Pete, can we meet next week? I've got to cut costs by about 20%. And I'm like, okay. I didn't have the case study done, but I'm like, okay, let's do it. And so we got his ready. I had a 28% increase ready for him. It was 30 pages. So we sent it to him the day before we'd meet, give him a chance to read it, and then we'd sit down and meet. And it was a fairly short meeting. And he's like, "This is exactly what I've been looking for. We'll do the 3-year deal. And this is just perfect." And I was like, "Okay, awesome." And so Leland and I walked out of the meeting and were like, "Wow, that couldn't have gone better." And scratching our heads a little bit. And so then the next meeting a few days later was with our biggest customer, and he represented about 15% of our business. And I love him, but notoriously, especially in the first few years, we would argue about how you calculate the percentage increase. Because, you know, depending on how you do the ratio, it's 0.1% or something more. And so it's like, okay, this is going to be a fun meeting. And it was a lot of money on the line. And it was the same thing. It was about a 5-minute meeting. And he's an old Marine, so there was lots of F-bombs involved. But he basically said, "You'd have to be an idiot to not do this. We've been getting hit with increases already." And of course, I was like, "Okay, so for all of the customers, you need to go talk to them?" He's like, "No, we don't need to talk to them. I'm going to tell them what they need to do. This is ridiculous. We have to have you guys." Well, okay, great. And so we walked out of that meeting, and it was like, well, maybe we're not asking for enough money. So we had been putting in, if they signed like 3-year deals, we had been putting in, you know, like 1%, 2%, 3% savings, right, in there. And through the next 4 months, we talked to every single customer. The price increases were anywhere from 20 to, I think the highest one we did was 58%, which is crazy, but we hadn't given them a price increase in years. So that was really the deal behind that. And in that, we lost two customers, and one was fairly new. They were tiny and they just couldn't do more. And the other one, I just really bobbled the price increase. So God was super faithful. So we'd seen our revenue was going up, you know, massively. We'd been able to give big increases to our team with a promise for what that looked like over the next couple of years. And it was really good. And so again, back at the beginning, Linda still was not the entrepreneur, but in 2015, she came into the business full time, and she was doing the books and the accounting, running the front desk. And eventually, you know, we hired more people, but she was still doing the books and the accounting part of it. And, you know, she's great at it, but the stress of caring, you know, now we had almost 150 families that we were caring for as employees, and you carry that as an employer. And so in late November, beginning of December, I just felt like God said, okay, you finish the race if you want. And so it was time for us to sell. Mm. And so that kind of led to that next chapter.
Yeah. And that's around the time that you and I met. And we talked a little bit about, maybe it was a little bit before then, but around the same time, I was introduced by our mutual friend, Roger, who works here at NCF. And so we met and we talked about the opportunity to gift a portion of your business prior to a sale to increase your charitable impact. And we kind of left that meeting. One of those marching orders was, you know, as things kind of come together, you know, let's chat. But just remember, you have to do these before any type of binding letter of intent.
Right, yeah.
So you, I think it was in I think December, you gave me a ring and said, "Hey, you know, we're getting pretty ready to put the business on the market and want to talk about doing an asset gift." And so, talk about that experience with us a little bit and the conversation that you and I had and how that then translated to the gifting of part of your business.
Yeah, you know, I think I got a little bit of it in the jog because Alan was using some of those advanced asset giftings in his business, but I definitely didn't understand it. And then I think when we met, Eric, the first time, you told the story of not understanding it and selling your business and giving away, but that you could have done so much more. So,
yeah.
You know, part of your personal mission was to save other business owners from that. And so that stuck with me for sure. And so, yeah, we talked about it. And so you asked me for some numbers and I gave you where I thought it was probably going to come in at, you know, and see what the market does. The other interesting thing that happened in December was that Lynn and I always, we do the one word for the year. And so in December we picked that. And I really felt like the word that God had for me in December of 21 for 22 was content or contentment. Mm. And so it's a really interesting word. And I typically then go through, you know, the concordance and figure out where they are at in the Bible. And the verse for me that year became Hebrews 13:5-6, which is, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have. That's pretty powerful when you're getting ready to do the biggest sale of your life, to be content with what you have. And then it goes on to say, because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. And so we say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can mere mortals do to me? I think it's easy in the process of selling your business to get, well, of course you want to get the most out of it you can, right? But it's also scary because you're going to get a big sale price, but your source of income is also going away, right? So it's a huge opportunity to trust in the Lord. And so that be content with what you have has just been a verse that continues to just resonate in our hearts. So we got a little further along. I think we met again in, I don't know, maybe late January of 22. And, you know, we had an offer on the table. By the way, we hired a broker in our industry and, you know, I highly recommend getting professional help when you're doing that biggest transaction of your life. So we had good advisors around us. And then you and I sat down in at Panera in Loveland here, and you laid out some giving scenarios to us of what this complex asset gift might look like.
Yeah. Yeah, if memory serves me correctly, I mean, you and Linda had kind of had this, at least initially, the conversation was kind of a tithe mentality. Let's go in and think about gifting 10%. And so we put together a very quick illustration that showed, you know, what does it look like if you gave 10% of your business, the 10% of the profits from the business after a sale versus giving 10% to NCF prior to a sale and then selling the business. And that number was, it was a nice difference. But then, I explained, I said, Pete, I'm not trying to be coercive or anything like that. I just want to give you education. But our tax law, it's not linear. It's kind of like a hockey stick. And the more generous you are, the more generous the tax code actually is. And so I showed you, I think, a 15 and a 20 and a 25 and a 30. I mean, I showed you several. And then I put one other in front of you. I put a 50% in front of you. And the 50%, I remember, actually, I showed you that you started crying. And I didn't know about this contentment piece. This is so neat to hear this side of the story. Tell me what was your and Linda's reactions as you then went home armed with these different, you know, illustrations of what the impact could be?
Yeah, I think I probably was emotional about it, but I also thought you were crazy, you know, giving 50% away. It's like, okay. But when you look at the leverage you get through a complex asset gift to do something, I mean, what that meant was we were going to be able to give away more money over the next few years through this one gift than probably, and we'd been faithful tithers and generous, than probably we had given like our entire adult lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it meant. It was pretty, pretty huge. And so, I, you know, fumbled through those illustrations with Linda and, you know, we both just went away and prayed about it. And, you know, this journey of generosity, it was for both of us. It was life changing. You know, there was other fun things, particularly in 2020. Like one, we wanted to love on our people, and we talked about that a lot. But there were also things of, you know, when the government shut down the restaurants, it's like, well, these are other small business people like us. How are they going to survive? And so we were committed to, you know, going to local restaurants, not the chains or any of that, and just helping these guys try to survive, right? And then towards the end of December, they opened back up. And I think in one of the NCF Saturday 7 things, somebody was talking about, you know, it's not just a tax gift. It's like you can be generous in all kinds of other ways. And so the restaurants were back open. We were fighting people to give, you know, $100 tip to or something like that. But we had a $500 tip in our pocket. Mm. And we were just looking for the right person. And it was at a fast casual restaurant here in Loveland. And literally there was one other family in there. There was us and, you know, and staff in there, right? And we were talking to the waiter who we'd known. We'd seen him before. We didn't really know him that well, but he was down to working one day a week. Mm. And he had a family with 2 kids and just, you know, he's positive, but like they're struggling, right? It's like, okay, God, this is clearly the person. So, you know, we got our bill and put our credit card on there, and he brought it back, you know, for the tip. And so we just we stuck the money under the receipt and booked out of the restaurant really quick. He flagged us down in the parking lot. Again, there was nobody else at the restaurant right at that point. So and we just told him, hey man, we appreciate you and we want to show you God's love just in a practical way. And, you know, all 3 of us were crying at that point. And so that was just some really cool stuff that, you know, it really was transformational for both of us in that. And so we went away and we prayed about what should the gift be. And we both, it's like, okay, what is your, again, I remember a Saturday morning at our kitchen table. It's like, what's your number? And I always make her go first, because usually she's more generous than me. And she said, well, mine's 50%. And I said, mine is too. And so we were on the same page. And then, you know, we got a hold of you on Monday. And, you know, I think the first thing you said was praise God. And then, you know, I'll work up the paperwork, right? So,
yeah.
And we didn't know how exactly I think we had a solid offer at that point, but we were going through, you know, all the due diligence of it. And so it was really cool. And, you know, there was an earnout associated with the offer and all of that stuff. And God was just faithful. I felt very confident we were going to, you know, make the earnout. In fact, so confident that, I asked that there would be no top on it. And the company that bought us wasn't really interested in that, so they put a cap on it. And we blew over that by a mile, mm-hmm. which was a huge blessing to them. So, but that meant that all of that money came into the fund, and it was huge. We've been having fun giving money away. You said it was to NCF, but really it was in a donor advised fund that we can direct, mm-hmm. You know, where we want. And so it's been a blast and a huge blessing. And we wouldn't have known to do that. We'd have given money away for sure, but we'd have given mm-hmm. more to the government had we not known about this complex asset gift.
You have a special family story that you guys did with your kids after the asset gift had been made and everything had been liquidated. Can you share that with our listeners, please?
Yeah. So I think the other thing that happened kind of during this time is Matthew 6:20. And, you know, I'm sure listeners of the podcast or, you know, the Saturday Seven will know Randy Alcorn's book, The Treasure Principle. But Matthew 6:20, you know, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And so that's what we named our donor advised fund. And so this, you know, our transaction happened pretty quickly. 5 months to sell a business is a pretty quick transaction. But during that time, we're running our business. We're also doing all of this work behind the scenes. You know, you have basically two full-time jobs going on. And because our kids are in the community, they know a lot of people, we couldn't tell them what was going on. You know, we didn't want to lose employees. We didn't want to lose customers. So really it was on, you know, Linda and I kind of had this secret operation going. And so the day that we closed, we sent them a picture and we were toasting over some champagne and, you know, asked them what, and this is not usual for us on a Friday night, right? But had them guess on our family text what we were celebrating. And, you know, I think our son said, "You're pregnant," and we would not be celebrating that at this point in our life. I don't know, there's lots of other silly guesses. And we said, "No, we sold the company today." And so they were kind of blown away by that. But we wanted to be intentional and, you know, put some markers in place. So a few weeks later, we had a dinner at Sunny Lubick Steakhouse, and we walked them through, you know, the journey. And a lot of it, they had no idea, you know, that there were times as a business owner that we didn't get paid. We took money out of our bank account to make sure payroll got done. And, you know, you work a lot of hours. There are plenty of 80 and 100 hour weeks, you know, particularly in those early and middle years. And so we just let them know some of the story. And then, you know, and then we let them know about the gift. And the best part of that was that we gave my son, my daughter and their families, and then my mom, each of them $10,000 out of the fund. And the only direction out of it was that you got to give it away to something that is kingdom oriented. And so we had fun over the next few months of getting the grandkids involved and our kids involved in giving that money away. And so that was really, really cool to be able to do that with them and to celebrate that moment with them.
I love how you incorporated the family in that and brought them into the giving journey.
Yeah.
The excitement, you know, was there any, you know, just neat story that flew out of that from the kids or the grandkids and thinking about where to give?
Yeah, I think one of our granddaughters, they had some money kind of that they hadn't designated, and it was Christmas time, and it was Compassion sends out like a, you know, a book of things that you can give to, kind of like a toy book, but it's not toys. It's
gift catalog.
Yeah, gift catalog. And one of our granddaughters went in there and picked out, I don't know, probably 50 things out of there. So we, you know, we set the donation to Compassion with all of the line items, and they sent us I think they sent us like an immediate email back. Well, thank you for the detailed gift. And then about a month later, they sent back a thank you with like postcards of each of those little ministries. And so we were able to share that with our granddaughters, and you know, they could see some of the impact of what they did, which was really, really fun.
Pete, you just came back from a mission vision trip to Tanzania. I wonder if you could share some insights from that trip and hear how God is directing this next chapter for you and Linda.
Yeah, I think it was fun, and thanks for asking about it. I think one of the visions in our life for a long time has been Guatemala, actually. And so we've also been down there twice in the last year. And we we work with a couple of missionaries down there. One, Casa Tabito, that serves starving babies, and then El Rosario Christian Boys Academy, that serves middle school boys. Boys in Guatemala tend to leave their families. And so George and Vada, who are in charge of that mission, just have a vision to change that dynamic there in DeGrevo in middle school. And they've got some cool things happening there. So that was kind of our first trip. And then I got invited to go to Tanzania in October and said we'd pray about it. And it was a guy's trip because it was going to be way out in the bush and camping in kind of some rough conditions. And so Linda and I are like, yeah, I got to say yes, this is an amazing opportunity. So we were there from March 3rd to 16th. And Arusha is the main city you fly into, particularly if you're doing a safari or going to Kilimanjaro, you'd probably go to Arusha. And we drove out of Arusha about 8.5 hours into the bush to be in an area where the Hadza tribe is. They're the last hunter-gatherer tribe in Tanzania. And a church in Arusha had purchased 5 acres out there. And they're supporting 2 evangelists in that area. One is from the Datoga tribe, but he feels like he's been called to the Hadzas. And the other is a Hadza. And they both have like just miraculous stories of how God saved them. And the Hadzas don't have the Bible in their language. There's less than 2,000 of them. They're a small people group. And so we built a shade structure basically for them, a pole barn that eventually the church there will put, brick walls up around, and they'll have an enclosed structure. But for now it gets them out of the sun and the shade. And they came and helped us. And, it was super humbling to be in an area where, think about how many Bibles you have in your house. We probably have 20 of them, I would guess. I haven't counted them. I probably need to. And I have access to probably 100 more on my phone, right, in various translations and whatnot. And they don't have a single word in their language of the Bible. And so that was just super compelling to me. And I think it'll mark me for a long time, reaching the unreached, that the reality is most of these people will live and die and never know a thing about Jesus. But for these 2 evangelists that are there, and the coolest part is the local church in Tanzania is doing it. So we just had a opportunity to come alongside them and encourage them, and catch a vision for, part of the world that, God's word is not very strong in. So it was really, it was a huge moment. And I think, we'll see what God has to do, but definitely I think, we're too old to be missionaries at this point in our life. But we'd love to lead others on kind of vision ministry trips like this. And we absolutely are called to, encourage, the missionaries that are on the field. It's tough work and tough conditions. And so just to encourage them and support them, I think it is huge. A lot of times they've gone out, with great fanfare, and then, they feel forgotten out there. So, to have those personal relationships and encourage them is really, I think, part of our next phase of things.
It's neat to hear how God has confirmed that for you guys. And just knowing we can support and we can do a lot of encouragement and being connected to them as they are out. And it is neat to hear the story of Tanzania church doing this within their own country. It's just, that is a beautiful story. So thanks so much for sharing that, Pete. What do you and Linda wish that other Christians knew about generosity and stewardship?
Oh gosh. I think what Linda would say right off the bat is how fun being generous is. Mm-hmm. And I think that the biggest, what we were most convicted by the Holy Spirit after we left that job, was it was easy for us to write a check, honestly, but the life model, labor, influence, finance, and expertise, that requires your time. And as busy business owners, like our time was really precious. And so God really convicted us around, I want your time. you know, more than writing a check. And so I think that's been the fun for us is getting, we've written lots of checks, which has been great fun, but getting personally involved in various ministries and just serving people. And they don't even, they have no idea who we are, but we're just there to serve them. You know, and it can be really humble stuff. But that's been probably the most rewarding thing for us of just seeing God work directly with people.
So good. So good. Well, Pete, we are so grateful that you have joined us today. Thank you and Linda for stewarding your story and sharing it with the listeners. And we pray for great impact. And on the Generosity Now podcast, we seek to inspire, equip, and connect our listeners for generous kingdom impact and whole life stewardship. For more information on us, please check us out at ncfgiving.com/Rocky Mountains and generositynow.org. And please go ahead and subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a 5-star review and share it with your network. And I mean that. Find somebody that you could share this story with, Pete and Linda, and that would be a great encouragement to us and to them. And in today's doxology, we're coming out of 1 Timothy 6:6-8. And this is perfectly timed with what Pete talked about before. Lori, read that for us.
But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content.
Yes, and amen. Thank you so much for being with us today, Pete.
Thank you, guys. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Pete.